Yeah, this is an interview with Mr. A. Molyneux, M-O-L-Y-N-E-U-X, on the 11th of December, 1965.
The reason is...
Well, let's try turning your mind back about 50 years, shall we?
50 years.
Over 50 years.
Now, you yourself, you say, joined up with the 5th steamer from Palm to Quebec. And then for the first time...
No, I joined up with the 117th.
Oh, I see.
I went overseas with the 117th.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got into England, they split us. The 5th CMRs are all cut to pieces as Ypres. You see? And so they split us up, and then some went to the 2nd, some went to the 1st, and some went to the 5th. Well, I was one of the ones who went to the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to do a lot of running. Maybe he told you something about it.
Yes.
I used to be a good 10-mile man.
Mm-hmm.
And we had our division of sports, and of course GR, he bets.
Well, now let's go back to the very beginning on this.
You want Vimy Ridge?
No, I want, first of all, the first time that you met Bert. So the first time.
Well, I met him in the. In the winter of 1617, before the Vimy Ridge fight,
mm-hmm.
My first impression of the man was I didn't know him and never seen him in my life before. He come up in the front line trench in front of Vimy Ridge before we had it. And in Neuville-Saint-Vaast, I think that's the way you'd pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it flat. And he came in the front line. He says, okay, you, put your rifles down. Pick up a half a dozen Mills bombs and come on with me. My first time I'd seen him. We crawls out of the trench over towards Jerry's line. Old was dead and been buried and a half buried in my first experience of no man. And we go in behind the Germans in their sap trench. Well, you know what a sap mm-hmm. trench is. And we get in behind them and we surprise them. Six of them, we bring them back with us. He's first. He don't go behind us. He's in front of us.
Well, did you know who he was? I mean...
We knew he was an officer at the time. That's all. That's all I knew. See? And we go, and there we came, we bring him back, and then wasn't many days after that, we got orders that we were to go back to Rainburg.
Well, now, before you go back, I mean, you captured these six German prisoners.
That's the last I saw.
That's the last you saw first?
That's I saw them. Or Perch, he went to the headquarters then, and then I didn't see him in the trenches anymore for a few days. But nearly every day he'd come around. He'd walk right down the trench, or up on top sometimes. I've seen him get right up on top and walk right along, and Jerry only 100 yards away from us. My God, he's crazy sometimes, I think. Death didn't worry him at all.
Well, I mean, this would be asking for it, wouldn't
sure.
it?
Sure. He'd get right up there, boy, and he'd walk right along. He had no fear.
Well, what sort of impression did this make on the people in the trench?
Well, we thought, well, if he can take it, we can, and he'd come around. There's one spot there in the trench where keep your head down, because there's a sign there. They had a machine gun. And every so many minutes, they'd give it a burst, hoping somebody'd be going by. Well, you have to keep your head down, you see. I seen him walk right through there. Never put his head down. But he wouldn't ask you could do anything he wouldn't do himself. No, sir, he would not. That's how I met him then. We went out to behind to train for the Vimy Ridge scrap.
Well, this would be after this time in the trenches.
We'd been in
this
the trench.
Incident you mentioned.
Yes.
The next time you would meet him, as you mentioned, would be
back of the line.
Back of the line.
And we went back to Rainburg, behind O'Shell.
Mm-hmm.
And I should say 20, 25 miles, maybe from Vimy Ridge. It's a day's march, a good big day's march, see? And we went back there, and we had stacks of hay put up according to machine gun nests at Vimy Ridge. And we had to advance on them in our practice, you see, getting ready for Vimy Ridge. Well, he was always out there. He's out there daylight, right with us fellas, all the time. So then when we've been out there a while, we had a sports day. Brigade sport, 8th Brigade. And there was this road race, and I went in it. And I won it. Well, he bet on me, you know, and so did the other officers and everything. And then right then, he made me his batman.
Did he?
Yeah. I was his batman then, from then on.
Uh-huh.
But I had to go on parade, just same as anybody else, you see. And after we got that finished, we went up. I didn't go over the top at Vimy Ridge. He did. But he was never behind his battalion. He was always in front of it.
Well, if I remember correctly, the 5th GMR had a supporting role, did they not, at Vimy Ridge?
Had what?
They had a supporting role at Vimy Ridge.
No, we went over.
But you weren't in the first wave?
Yes, we were in the first wave. Sure. Sure, I went through the tunnel, the Goodwin Tunnel.
Funny, I didn't realize that.
Yes, we went over and we took our objective, the top of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I went through this tunnel. There was a tunnel there miles long.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my job was to go through that and carry 10 gallons of water.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And then we meet up in the trench on the top of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got there and everything, and I just got into the top of the hill, and somebody put a bullet right through the two cans I had. And so I had all the way back to get more water.
Oh,
you see? And he was right there. He was never behind. And any of the boys stopping and asking for anything at any time, and he would stop and consider it and give you an answer. There was no fooling around.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And then we, after we took that, we went down, I think we went to Hill 70, I'm not sure. Just forget a little. It was a long time
ago. Yeah, I realize that, yeah.
And we went to Hill 70, I think, and we were in there we went down to Lens, and we were just a little way out from Lens, holding the line, that's all. There was nothing doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got orders. We had to go quick. And next thing we knew, we were in Ypres, just like that.
Oh, yeah.
You see? Mm-hmm. But going into Vimy Ridge, when we were coming in there, that mile from Renberg, that walk, 20 miles. Now, he had a horse. He never rode that horse. He walked with us. He walked the 20 miles right in front, come back, see how the boys were, walk ahead again.
Well, now, you would get to know him possibly as well as anybody in the company, being his batman and all the rest of it. And before we go on to the next battle, which I half imagine will be the Regina Trench Raid, I think.
That was at Vimy Ridge, the Regina Trench.
Was that before?
Yes, that was before my time.
Oh, was it?
Just a little bit before my time.
I see.
I came in just in the winter of beginning.
Oh, that's right. Yes, you're right. Got it.
And then after we finished there and we got these orders that we have to go to Passchendaele, we didn't know where he was going, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we pulled in, we marched past the cloth hall in Ypres, and we went towards Passchendaele then, and we stopped at St. Jean, I think they call it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of forts there that were pretty well battered up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we stayed there. That would be about October the 7th to 28th, 1917. And then we moved up on the 29th, up to the front line trenches. We moved up there ready for the next morning, where we were going to go over the top. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, GR called me. I don't think he minds me calling him GR. Of course, it isn't very polite. But that's what he got over there all the time.
Always that way, eh?
Always GR. Wasn't the old man or anything like that. GR. So then he called me into his dugout. He was in a pillbox, a German pillbox. He called me and he called me young fellow all the time. Youngster. And of course I was young. And he says, "Here's a gallon of rum. Issue the rum." I says, "Okay." So I takes the gallon of rum and mark the tune. First of all, I dumped the water out of my water bottle. And I filled it up with rum. And I went around and I give each the boys their rum, you know, and I run short. So I went back and I says, "GR," I says, "I run short of rum. Well, you give me another gallon." I goes out. Well, when we got finished, we had some left, so some of the boys jumped up their water out and took the rum, you know. And at about 3 minutes to six on the 30th of November, or October rather, I never knew there was a battery in behind us at all. And when they opened up, I'm telling you, it was something. Well, we had to go down a hill, just like going down the street here, maybe 100 yards, and then leveled out, then we had to go up a little.
This is a Passchendaele.
Passchendaele. And when you go down to the bottom there, it was nothing but muskeg. Mud up to your hips.
Yeah.
You couldn't walk. You had to crawl, holding your rifle up, and you had to crawl. Well, I know, I saw him several times, giving somebody a pull. I give people a pull, and they give me a pull to get out of this mud. Well, we got our objective, and then we dug in.
Well, now, quite a bit happened, I imagine, between the time you left and when you got your objective, though.
Oh, yes, yeah, there was quite a lot of fighting.
Yeah, can you tell me a bit about that, as you remember it?
Well, there wasn't much in front of me, in front of my platoon, but on the right of me, they were going it hand to hand.
Well, where were you in relation to Perks at this time?
Well, he was right. He was all over the place. He was in front of us sometime. He's over the other way another time.
Is that right?
Oh, yes, waving his revolver. Come on. Come on. You see? And I never will forget. I think it was there before the battle. The revolver, he says, "I don't want anybody to hesitate." He says, "We're going that way." And then we dug in, everything got as quiet as this room. And there was one lone plane came up, and they started shooting at it. Anti-aircraft guns. And I was lying there trying to snipe at some of them retreating, you see. They were too far back now to get. And this lonely shell, it burst away up there in a piece of lead up right there.
Oh, for heaven's
sake. And I saw GR then, before I passed out. He was still on his feet, going up these would-be trenches and looking in pillboxes to see if there's anybody there.
Yeah.
He was still going. And although I could see blood on him.
That's right,
yeah. Yes, he was wounded pretty bad in the leg, I believe. Yeah. I could see his pants were torn. But he was still going. Well, I passed out then. I had enough sense to roll into a shell hole. Another fellow and I. And then the night started to rain. I didn't know it. When I woke up the next afternoon, about 3 o'clock, I was in water up to here. And this fellow in with me, a fellow by the name of Ernie Rowe, he's dead, he said. He was holding me up. He pulled me up there. He was hit exactly the same as me, only not so bad. And I lay there, and I said to Ernie, I said, I think I've lost my legs, Ernie. I said, I haven't got any legs. I fell down, I couldn't feel any legs. No, numb. Well, he says, I don't think so. You wouldn't be alive, Al. Okay, so he pulled me, and I crawled, and we got out of the hole. I see my legs were there, and the sun came out and began to warm me. And then they began to come to life. Well, then, I never saw G.R. after that. I crawled back about 400 yards through the mud hole and everything into a pillbox, and I lay there then for another 48 hours. And the only thing that kept me alive was my rum that I had in my bottle.
Oh, yeah.
And then they came, they passed me out lying on the field and says, oh, here's another stiff. We'll leave him here. We're getting lazy. I could hear him, but I couldn't talk to him, you see. So then, oh, it would be November the 4th, 5th, I guess, when the stretcher bearers picked me up and started back with me. And they took me to Poperinge. They put me in a casualty clearing station there, where 24 of them, 22 dead the next morning. It was a German and I left. And I had the nurse there that was in the blow-up in Halifax. Mm. And she was all scarred. I had her. And they put me down. It was a German and I left. And I had the nurse there that was in the blow-up in Halifax.
Mm.
And she was all scarred. I had her. Well, then, they shipped me down after that, down to Rouen. I was in tents there in the hospital. I was aspirated 9 times, and stick the needle in your lungs and pump your lungs out. And then I was sent over to Eastbourne. All the time I was in that hospital in Rouen, G.R. sent me a pound note every week. I don't know whether he remembers it or not.
Is that true?
Yeah. Every week I got a pound note. Yeah? I never did forget that, you know.
No.
But I never bothered to go and see him when I come back. I figured in his position he didn't have time. You see, but when he was back east, and somebody asked him where I was, and he says, I don't know. He says, well, do you know where he is? Yes, he's in British Columbia somewhere. So when I went back east, they told me he was asking about me. So when I come back, we went over to him.
Yeah.
You see, we were very well. Then I went to, now if you want a picture of him and me together, you can get one at one of the papers over there.
Uh-huh.
At the Caledonian Sports.
Uh-huh.
They took us.
Oh, well.
I was on my holidays at the time. You see.
Well, you've mentioned him several times. You've given me several pictures of him as an officer. What about as a man? What were some of his foibles? What were some of his characteristics?
He was a soldier from A to Z.
Right through and through.
Right through. He was a soldier. He wouldn't fit in anywhere else, I don't think, in society, only as a soldier. And that was his life, and he lived it. Every breath he took, he was a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't see too much of him. You know, he was always around out on every parade and everything,
mm-hmm.
giving the orders and everything, but I forgot to tell you, after I won that race, he says to me, he says, I tried to take you to Paris with me on my holiday, but he says, they wouldn't let me go. But he says, what would you want? I said, I want a case of scotch. He says, okay, give me an order, I get this case of scotch. Well, I take it up to the platoon, and they proceeded to get drunk. Well, the next morning, I gets out on parade. Another fellow by the name of Charlie Bourne got out on parade. A fellow by the name of West. That was all out of the platoon, out of 36 or 40 men, see? So he come over to me and he says, what, they all got a headache, Al? I says, yeah. He says, okay, have them out here this afternoon on parade. That's all he said. Yeah, he do.
Did he ever speak to you about his family?
Yes, his mother is in London at that time.
His father?
His mother.
No,
he never mentioned his father.
I think his mother actually was in Victoria.
Oh yes, she just died, didn't she?
Several years ago.
Not very long.
No, not too terribly long.
It's since we were over there.
No.
And, but they lived, I believe they were quite well off people at one time.
There.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. In London.
Yeah.
They had servants and everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just try to think of some other questions I could ask you about him as your memory goes. 55 years. What was the opinion of the men about him? I imagine from all you say, he seems to be a very well-liked and admired actor.
I'll tell you something, but I don't want to recall.
You never,
as long as I was there, heard G.R. swear or use a harsh word against his men. I did hear him once reprimand one fellow that stole some money off one of the boys. And he told him, nice way though. I never saw him riled. And I was close to him. Fine man. Of course, so much happens in the war, you know, and after 50, 55 years, and I was a youngster then, kind of slips you.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you one thing, if anything comes to my mind, I can see that battle just as plain as day right now.
The Battle of the Somme, you mean?
Yes.
How would you describe the field? I mean, you did mention the going down the slope and then...
Well,
the
it's rolling country.
Rolling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was there till you got up on this little hill.
Mm-hmm.
See, Jerry had pill boxes on the upper hand on the place where we were before we took off. Somebody took them away from them a few weeks before.
Mm-hmm.
And we were occupying them, and then we had to go down this slope, and then over this here muskeg, mm-hmm. and I'm telling you, it was a muskeg.
Yeah. Oh, there's the pictures I've seen of it, you know.
It's terrible.
Yeah. I've heard that, too.
I've had shells bust 2 feet from me, just bore me over. Oh, yeah, saved a lot of lives.
You didn't see General Brooks, or Major Brooks, as you would then be, you didn't see him get wounded, did you?
No, but I saw him at Passchendaele, I saw him sort of wilt a little, and then keep on going again.
Yeah.
And then I saw the blood, and that was where I passed out, because I was looking to see where the rest of the boys was from my platoon, you see. And...
From where you were in your, you can't call them trenches because they weren't trenches, from your position.
Funk hole.
Yeah, at the time you kicked off at Passchendaele, could you see your objectives?
Oh yes, we had our objective then.
You know what I mean, at the time when the battle starts, I mean you're...
Oh yes, we know where we're going.
You can see
it? You can see where you have to go.
Uh-huh.
And of course you go all over that on blueprints before,
yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
you look it all over and you know exactly where you're going. And if you get through that mud hole and you get there, and we get up on the hill and we got orders to dig in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we dug in as best we could, filled our sandbag and put it up in front of us, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it's just as quiet as right here now. And this lone shell goes up there, and I get it off that.
Well, you actually got up to the objective before you were hit.
Before I was wounded.
I see.
Oh yes.
Well, now did you get any how shall I put it? On your left, there was a British regiment, the Artist Rifles,
yes,
which really never got off the ground. You know, they never really gained their objectives. And I gather that because of this, there was a considerable amount of machine gun fire coming in
crossways.
Yeah,
yes.
From your left.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything about that?
No, that didn't bother us too much because really, I think at that time, if we'd had orders to keep going, we could have got in behind them. Mm. But when you get orders to stop, you stop.
Yeah.
You see? And that's where they stopped us right there, and then I believe they did clear that up after.
Mm.
I'm not sure, because I got wounded. I got wounded about 9:30 in the morning.
Now, you mentioned hand-to-hand fighting on the right.
Yes.
Could you tell me a bit more about that?
Well, I could just see them there, and they were going at each other with the bayonets and rifles.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have time to look at them, you know.
Yeah. Yes, I know.
You're looking for your own safety, and you're looking for a place to get, to hide.
Yeah.
You see? But I remember looking over, and I could see they hadn't got theirs, and I noticed Charlie Rowe's name. He says to me, he says, they're having a tough time over there, Al. It looks like it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he says, this is where we're supposed to be. We'll stay here.
Mm-hmm.
So we stayed there, and then we got it.
Do you remember anything about the pigeon incident?
No.
They're evidently midway out, or perhaps a little bit beyond the halfway mark. There was a chap with Major Perks with a pigeon basket, and in any event, during the course of the battle, at one phase during the battle, he let this pigeon, Major Perks had let this pigeon go.
Oh, I don't know. I remember seeing a pigeon crate in the dugout,
mm-hmm.
That's all.
Yeah.
I didn't go over and look at it. It was covered up. I could see it was a crate, though.
Yeah.
But that's the way they got the orders back quick,
yeah.
You see.
Yeah.
No, it's war is a funny thing, but I had my dad, me, dad was in one war, I'm in the next one, and my son in the next one.